Today, I would like to speak about devotion, as you can see from the player's title of description. Now, devotion is something which is dear to us. It's something which is attractive to us as people, all people. People are devoted to their children. People are devoted to their family, to their spouses, to their parents, to their jobs, to their careers, to their arts. People are devoted to their countries. People have devotion in various ways, which is manifested throughout their lives. It's a characteristic of their lives to devote themselves to something particular. Devotion is a natural characteristic of the life of everybody. However, some people manifest devotion in a very spiritual way, and it is it is used in a manner to expand their evolution, their spiritual evolution. So this spiritual discipline can be understood as a way in which one can expand his spirituality, expand his spiritual consciousness. Now, when you think of it as a discipline, you think of it as a kind of a spiritual path. And when you think of it as a spiritual path, you think of it as a way in which a person can advance by doing something which is similar to a kind of a structured formula. Now, this brings up what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about how our way of manifesting devotion in spirituality is not linked to a formula. Of course, devotion can be seen as part of a discipline. Devotion can be seen as something which is connected with a very specific way in which you act, a very specific way in which you think and feel. You can be given rules, you can be given procedures, you can be given processes by which you can manifest your devotion. And when you accept these rules, or shall we say, methodologies by which you can manifest devotion, you may feel very safe in what you're doing. You may feel very comfortable that what you're doing fits a particular recommended or established procedure that guarantees results. However, this way of seeing devotion or seeing this path of spirituality is fraught with obstacles that are not so obvious when you first look at them. These obstacles are hidden. They're hidden in the sense that when you do act like that in a kind of a formulated manner, you miss the whole point of devotion. Or rather, shall we say, you can miss the whole point of devotion. You can become confused as to what is the purpose of what you're doing. What is the point of what you're doing? What is the meaning of what you're doing? Now, I am not saying this has to be so, and I am not saying this is the rule, but I am saying this is a very strong possibility that has manifested periodically in practitioners of formulated devotion. Now, let's analyze this a little bit. Let's go back and start off again with what we started speaking about in the beginning of this lecture, how everybody is devoted in their own particular way. Let's start to discuss how a person becomes devoted to something. Now, we could start off with the example of a mother and a child, because mothers become devoted to their children practically before they are born. It is natural for a mother to be devoted to her child, because that is the nature of mothers, because they are giving birth to the child, nurturing the child, protecting the child, carrying the child. The child becomes part of them. Because the child is part of them, their devotion to the child is part of the essence of their being. So it is natural for them. This is part of the biology. This is part of the DNA of the living being, that this kind of nurturing to sustain the species, to desire to propagate the species, is part of the whole way in which living beings are created. So that's not exactly the best example, but it's a very good example in the sense that spiritual devotion, when you are devoted spiritually to a spiritual ideal, is also part of our, it's not the best way to say it, but spiritual DNA, part of the essence or the original energy of our spirit. And because it is part of our essence, it has a very similar part or similar aspect to it, just as a mother having that devotion to her child. Yet, when we speak about the development of devotion within a person who does not manifest it spiritually at present, the example of somebody who has something like a hobby or a skill that he devotes or he or she devotes themselves to would be a better example. Now, let's take the example of an artist or a writer or a painter, somebody who is expressing themselves and is very devoted to their art. Now, these people are not really, unless they're very special like Mozart, born into a perfected skill. They have to learn very much during their childhood. They have to study it. They have to practice it. But there is some seed within them which inspired them to move to that form of expression and to devote themselves to it gradually more and more. I know in my life, I had some seed of wanting to express myself musically, and even though it was my sister who first started doing piano lessons, I just watched over the shoulder and learned and then started doing myself. Now, my sister is a very good artist. From when she was very little, she could draw very nicely. I have no such capacity to draw. So it manifested differently. It manifested in different ways according to some particular seed of interest or attraction which resonates well within us, how we wish to express ourselves. So the most important element is the particular seed which is within you, which is waiting to fructify. But what is the use of, for example, being interested in music but not having some training? After all, you need some training. You have to know about notes, about rhythm, about chordal structures, about syncopation, about harmony, so many different elements you require to know. Let's set aside for a second the rare cases where somebody becomes very good at something without having a formal training. That's rare, and I don't want to get into the discussion because people think they have learned very nicely, but actually those who know realize it's not very good at all, but that's another point. But if you want to do it in any way that is valuable, You learn some very basic things, and then you start getting into it more and more. And as you practice more and more, you get a taste because you feel it's getting better. You feel it is building. You like what you're doing. So you devote yourself to growing your capacity to express yourself in this way. The devotion is to the growth. The devotion is to the growth of the expression. And then you start to love what you do. You start to have a passion for it. It's a love for the way in which you are expressing yourself artistically. You start to have a passionate connection to it. And at that point, you start to use it as a means of self-expression. Now, to clarify, it is, of course, natural. It is, of course, required. It is, of course, part of the function of such devotion that you have to go through systematic stages to create the facility and skill within yourself to express yourself according to that artistic mode. But the driving force, the driving factor, is the taste you get from the evolution of your skill, the way in which you're capable of expressing yourself. Your love of the expression is what drives you, and you are devoted to the particular form of the expression. Now let's go back to how this relates to spiritual devotion. In some cases, if not a majority of the cases, people feel when they express themselves artistically, for instance, or a teacher may express themselves in a way which connects with children, or somebody may, in their devotion, be actually contacting others, they feel there is some spiritual connection there. Now, some people may say, I don't like that definition because, after all, they're just simply connecting to other people. Yet, I would say the taste in it is their connection to the energy of other people. And that energy is ultimately spiritual, even if it's manifesting in a way which is unaware of its own spirituality. Now, this is not my final point. I'm gradually building up the description of devotion, but bear with me for a while. I'm going to get to the where you think we have to go, but I'm going to go there in a little bit slow way so that our understanding of devotion becomes very broad. Let's say a person is more evolved, a person is more aware, and very much in contact with their own spiritual energy, very much in contact with the universal energy, with the supreme, feels that connection all the time. Now, such a person, when they engage in an activity, doesn't matter what you might label it, but any activity which connects to the energy of others will feel that connection as a very spiritual power. It does not matter whether the other person is aware of their spirituality or not, because that other person is a spiritual being who has spiritual energy. For the pedants among us, which I am one of them, unfortunately, to say he has spiritual energy is wrong. He is spiritual energy, or she is spiritual energy. We are spiritual energy. We don't have spiritual energy. I am spiritual energy that manifests in various ways. I may manifest it in a practical way. You notice I'm not saying material. In a practical way, or I may manifest it in a very esoteric manner. And you notice I'm not saying spiritual, because my manifestation is within the realm of spiritual energy. Maybe you'd like to pinpoint it another way, but I'm not choosing to do so. So let's say a spiritually aware person does something that touches another deeply, whatever it may be, but it touches them deeply, and they feel a spark of life reciprocating in that. So the spiritually aware person feels the connection. And for that person, they can feel the way in which their energy is spiritually connecting with others. And that is a way in which their devotion can manifest. In one sense, they may see somebody suffering due to trauma or emotional distress or anxiety or frustration or fear. And because of this, they feel good about rendering some kind of service to help others. They like to be of service to others. They like to do something good for others. Because they are devoted to manifesting spiritual energy, to manifesting that spiritual love, they are devoted to being of service, they can find opportunities for service in so many places. And therefore, they can find opportunities to be relevant as spiritual beings in any aspect of life. They can show their love and their concern, their desire to reciprocate emotionally or energetically, even with animals or plants. Now, I know this may sound strange to some people, not to those of you who've been around for a while, but some people may find, well, wait a minute, this is way off of the mark. But a spiritually aware person can hold part of a plant in their hands or touch the leaf of a plant and connect to that plant in a very real and a very significant way. These plants, they have their own kind of energy, and that energy is the direct manifestation of their life force. It doesn't have to be analyzed in terms of consciousness. You can feel their living energy and reciprocate it directly on the platform of living energy. You can feel when you offer your love to the plant, how the plant immediately reciprocates that and is so thankful for that energetic connection. If this is not an imaginary thing, this is something very real that one can have a direct experience of when one is capable of reciprocating and with great sensitivity with spiritual energy directly, rather than having to go through the process of manifesting it through consciousness. Now, you could, at this point, go into a discussion of how everything within the entire existence is spiritual energy, and how one can connect to everything within the entire existence with this spirit of devotion. And it would be correct to do so, and it would make a lot of sense. But so again, some people might be confused because it seems to be a very self-centered way of seeing devotion, a way which is depending on the self more than anything higher, quote unquote. And that way of seeing things, that way of seeing things from the point of view of the supreme down, is just as valid. So I would like to speak now about devotion from the point of view of the connection between the living entity and the supreme. And I will, again, for the sake of completeness, stop speaking about the supreme and speak about that divine source or the divine harmony, that divine beings which from whom all is connected, all is manifested. It is possible to have a conception which makes sense in many respects, that devotion is an exclusive relationship between a living being and the supreme, of servitude, of service, of connection in this direction, and all connections to any other living entity would come through that connection. In other words, I go from me to the supreme and out as it is desired by the supreme. Yet, one could also think of it that since all things are within the divine, even in Bhagavad Gita, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Vasudeva is everything. Everything emanates, or everything comes from, everything is connected to, it's all one, yet the difference in the individuation. One could see it as devotion to the spiritual energy as being the essence. One could see it, instead of a singular direction between man and God, one can see a direct connection between a living being and all other spiritual energy as being equally relevant within the domain of devotion. If you want to see the differences between us, if you want to amplify the differences, if you want to create many little individuated beings everywhere and diminish the importance of our connection within the oneness that is the supreme energy, the divine energy, you will find it very hard to relate to this concept. You will be very uninterested in this because you will see that, well, what do I have in connection with that person down the street who's a drunkard, who smokes cigars, who's eating cows or whatever? I mean, my relationship with that person, how would that manifest anything spiritual? And because of that particular conception, I am this individuated person here, the cigar-smoking, meat-eating personality down the street, is that individuated person there? There is no connection between us. Naturally, devotion could not flow in that direction. Now, if you were the kind of person who felt that they had a responsibility to save the world or do something wonderful for mankind or had some mission in life, you would be seeking out a way in which you could manifest your devotion towards that person. Therefore, preaching was born, so to speak, where somebody would go and speak the words of God as they have heard it from their tradition, bringing some book maybe, or bringing some particular spiritual icon or spiritual items or food or anything to save that person. In other words, you've got persons who have their connection with God, their unique particular connection with God, perhaps within an organization which has a connection with God, and that is the means by which you reach out to others and make the connection through that connection that you have. Now, that has its problems in the sense that not everybody's interested in what you have to say. You have to spend a lot of time being involved in interactions which are not very pleasant, just like a salesman has to be rejected at the door, and so on. However, this is not necessarily the way in which that devotion has to be defined. It's just one way to define devotion. And usually that way is very connected with the systematic, formulated development of aspects of devotion, which go in a very step-by-step, gradual manner to amplify your connection with the divine, with the supreme. For certain persons, this is a very comfortable, a very secure, and a very valid way to go. But it is not the only unique manner in which devotion can manifest. Let's go back to how devotion manifests in a person who has a passion for a particular art. This person has a passion to the spirit of what they are doing, the energy of what they are doing, and they can share with anyone who connects with that spirit, with that energy. For such persons, they don't care who is listening to their music. Let's use that example. They don't mind the characteristics or qualities of those who are the observers or listeners. They couldn't care less what they eat or what they do or what they are. All they care about is that person is connecting to their expression and appreciating it. You may have heard the expression, love me, love my dog. It means that if I have a dog and you love me, but you don't love my dog, then you don't really, I don't care whether you love me or not, because you've got to love me and my dog in order to love me. It's an expression. In other words, those who I love, when you don't love, it somehow doesn't make me very inspired to relate with you. Now, this is not the way God feels, but it is something which we should take into consideration. I'm going to use the word God because God makes it makes it easier to speak about when you use such a very generic word. It makes everything easy to speak about. Now, everybody will assume, everybody will accept God is equally the source of all living beings. All living beings are connected to God. Just like I feel connected, everybody feels connected. It's just the nature of God that we are all connected. So God is equally concerned with every living being everywhere because they are all that energy of God. God doesn't say, my energy over there is less than my energy over here. My energy over there has no importance. My energy over here has importance because it's got a bigger body or a bigger position or it's more powerful or smarter. So why would God be interested? Only in connection between you and God. And that all other connections have to take that into consideration. Why would God not be interested in you directly having a connection with another living entity? What would be wrong with that direct connection? What I'm speaking about is very subtle. So I'm going to give an example. Just bear with me here. A father has two children. One child knows who the father is. Another child doesn't know who the father is. But the father knows both children. The father is happy that the child who knows the father takes care of the child who doesn't, even if that child never tells the brother who the father is. The father feels happy when one takes care of the other, even if there's no knowledge of the father. Maybe there are reasons why that other child doesn't know the father. Maybe we can't understand those reasons right now. And maybe what's the most important thing for that child without knowledge is to feel the loving support of others without any condition whatsoever. I am not saying this is the optimal situation. I am not saying this is the best situation. I'm simply giving this as an example. Now, is that connection between the child with knowledge towards one without knowledge any less important to the father than connection to the father between the child who's aware? Is it any less important? In other words, does it lose importance because of the ignorance of that child? I don't think so, and I don't think God thinks so. For if I were to express my spirituality, express my devotion by connecting to the spiritual energy of another who may be unaware on a conscious level of God or even of that spirituality, God might be very happy with that in the same way as that example. From that point of view, sometimes pushing God towards a person can be a wonderful way to push them away from God. The idea that I will manifest my devotion, I will expand and grow and mature my devotion by going out and preaching it to others, is a dangerous idea in many respects. My devotion now becomes dependent on my doing something which may be against the best interests of another person, of another person's capacity to connect with God, maybe even against the interests of God. It is not a problem for mature people. It is not a problem for those who do not feel a need to prove themselves, to justify and rationalize their spirituality by having to go out and save the world. It is not a problem for those people. Those who are secure and mature, they feel that they have something to offer. They offer it in the mood of service to whoever wishes to accept such kind of service. They don't keep score of how their devotion manifested. It's not a quantitative thing. Many times we have heard from people who had experiences where they left this world, near-death experiences or whatever you want to call it, and they have come back to share something they understood. Many times they speak about how it was just some little act of devotion. I mean to say where the spirit connected to another spirit in a meaningful way of service, which was considered to be the most important aspects of their life. Now, everybody's different. Everybody has a different way in which they manifest their expression. Musicians do it in one way, artists do it another way, doctors do it another way. In their own way, they accept, they feel very good about having helped somebody. Otherwise, it's very difficult to be a doctor. Yet there are musicians who just play, couldn't care less what they're doing, couldn't care less whether you hear or don't hear, like or don't like, as long as you pay them. There are doctors who couldn't care less if you got better or not, as long as they got paid. There are people like that. Now, the thing that would distinguish a person who uses the spiritual energy of devotion, in other words, the energy of connecting, to be of service, to actually do something of value for others, is that desire, that taste to connect with the living energy of others. Now, if you were waiting in this discussion for me to come up with some earth-shattering, wonderful revelation about all this, well, it's not going to happen. This is just a very basic discussion about devotion. But I want to stop that and move now into what I feel is a very good form of it. I would like to describe how I feel my devotion manifests and how I would like to share it with you. Now, I ascribe to the understanding or the vision that the spiritual energy is everywhere and manifesting. And I feel the most important inspiration for me in that spiritual energy is my connection to the divine. For me, the whole foundation, the whole basis of my life is the way in which I, the spiritual energy, can connect with the divine when I sit in front of my deities, or I sit in front of the deities there in St. Petersburg, or in any way that I can connect with the Supreme. And when I sit like this, when I feel that connection like this, naturally, not even that I have to do it in any way, but naturally from within, I feel that desire to ask how I may be of service. Naturally, in my own spiritual connection with the Supreme, with the divine energy, with all of the divine beings, I feel a very deep closeness. I feel an affinity. I feel an empathy. I feel a flow of that energy. And that flow of energy is always characterized by love, by understanding, by appreciation, and above all, for me, acceptance. I don't have to be anything. There's no demand upon me to be anything. But still, I feel from within the urge, the calling to be of service. So I request, how may I be of service? How may I do something which is what is desired of me? Yet I'm fully confident that what is desired of me is something which not only can I do, but I will feel very good doing. I don't expect the Supreme is going to ask me to do something which somebody else is better off or should do. I feel in that connection and empathy and acceptance, confidence that whatever it is that I shall be of service of will be exactly what I should be from my own point of view and from the point of view of the Supreme. I feel harmonious in that way. I do not feel that anything I do is as good as anything else in this relationship between myself and the spiritual energy. In other words, I feel that there is a distinction. There's a better and worse. There's things which are better to do to amplify that connection between us. And there are things which don't amplify it. There are things I have to do because of the nature of the world. Just like to set up this broadcast. I have to do so many practical things which are not directly manifesting some devotional energy in the sense of love or empathy or sympathy. And the nice thing about the spiritual connection between myself and the Supreme is that when I do things which are of special significance, inasmuch as they are deeply impacting another person, I feel enormous reciprocation from that, encouragement. I feel that they positively impact the direction of my life by positively emphasizing and reciprocating with, in terms of a spiritual reward, so to speak, when something is done in a way which is very beneficial for me and others. And this gives inspiration to seek out other opportunities to do the same. Now, in that mood, the connection with any individual or any living being or anything which is within the interest of God is a very acceptable form of manifesting that devotion. And when connected in that way, when you feel the interest of the Supreme and your interest to be very similar or to be in resonating harmony, your devotion can manifest in a very real way that you can taste. Now, I feel that this is the essence of devotion. That's my conclusion. That's my realization. My conclusion is that when I know, I experience, I realize what resonates well, I'm very confident of my expression of being of service. I'm very confident of my spirituality. So this is something which I find is very relevant in my life. Devotion has become an extremely personal experience. And this is the subtlety of it. It's a personal experience. It is not a group experience. That experience is a manifestation of my taste. Because if you think about it, devotion is not a formulated physical or even mental activity. It's not like if you perform some act, if you go out and you do something step by step, a process, a formula, you actually have connected to devotion. It's not how I feel. Devotion is an energy. Now, I know you can define devotion as an act devoid of the energy, but I don't wish to do so. I'm speaking here of what makes me tick, not what makes me work. That's why I said a little while back, this is something subtle. It seems to be very obvious in one sense, and yet it eludes so many aspiring spiritualists. The individual connection between me, because I have no other capacity to connect except through me. The individual connection from me to another being is the way in which I will manifest my service. I am saying it's a given. It's an established fact. My connection with the Supreme. This is my essence. This is my taste. This is my basis and foundation. It's where I feel safe. It's where I feel comfortable. I feel no safer. I feel no more comfort than sitting in front of the deities. Yet, when feeling the connection naturally to be of service arises. Now, I live here in this world. I share this world with billions of other living beings. And when I wish to be of service in a way which is relevant in this situation, it manifests in my connection to others, where an empathetic resonation is created, where what I can be of service is manifested in a harmonious way to another who can accept that service. And it is my experience that when I act in that way, with that resonating empathy of service, my relationship with the Supreme is filled with appreciation. This is not an idea. This is not a speculation. This is not a possibility. This is my experience. And because it is my experience, it's like when you start resonating something which is made to resonate, the more energy you put into it, the more that resonation increases, the intensity and power of it increases. And as I can experience this appreciation more, as I can experience this connection more, this empathetic resonance more, my devotional experiences create a greater and greater desire and feeling to be of service, to wish to connect. And this affects every aspect of my life, every aspect of any spiritual connection, it affects it. It causes it to move to another platform. I'm not using the word increase. It moves to another platform upon which the experiences take place. I don't want to use the word increase because I'm trying to avoid any quantitative expressions. Because as soon as you have a quantitative expression, immediately you put things in a measurable box. And in this measurable box, you've got this more and less. You've got better and worse. You've got ways to, in which you think, to increase the quantity, because now that you've measured it, the next obvious step is to make more. But as soon as you start thinking in terms of that more, you lose connection to that taste of the experience. It becomes now a struggle or an endeavor to increase rather than a continuous flow of experience. So I like to think of devotion as a continuous experiencing as we move on, as we move forward, as we every moment have experiences which can resonate in an expansive matter. Not a question of growth, but an expansion of our taste, an expansion of our appreciation, of our empathy. It's just like if a person thinks that if they eat more quantity of food, the experience of eating is better. It's not necessarily like that. If one actually savors what one is eating and is appreciating the experience of the sharing of the organic cellular structure of that living being which is shared with us, and we experience that as an appreciation, the taste is not quantitative, it's a qualitative experience. I think one of the greatest obstacles to experience is the demand to link quantity, the quantification of the experience, with the satisfaction one can derive from it, or the connection you have to it even while it's taking place. So if you think back to where we were discussing about how the ever-present reality, the presentness of it, the existential existence as being the key to the connection to life, to living entity, to spirit, you can understand how devotion works through the existence of ever-present existential now, rather than, I think, the mystical experience of devotion. I think the mystical, shall we say, wonder of bhakti is when you can connect now the existence, the existential, ever-present reality of what we are with our experience of devotion. It's these two linked together which gives the key to enter into the mystical experience of bhakti. Let's just talk about Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because for me, I have seen that is the extreme example of devotion. It's just the way I feel. If you think about it, you couldn't possibly think of a greater antithesis to devotion, if you thought of it in a certain way, than war. War is based on selfishness. It is based on exploitation. It is based on the desire of one to conquer the other by killing, destroying, ripping the limbs off of, blowing to pieces people, causing them pain and agony until they surrender. Just think about it. Now, Krishna could have spoke Bhagavad Gita while Arjuna was on vacation. Krishna could have spoken Bhagavad Gita in the court of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Krishna could have spoken to Bhagavad Gita in the living room of Draupadi. He didn't need to do it then. Some people think that, Krishna caused Arjuna to have this weakness before the battle started so that Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. But if you think about it, that's not required. I mean, Krishna could have spoken anywhere. Yet I see an extraordinary opportunity to enter into the mystical aspect of bhakti, the mystical aspect of devotion, by examining how Arjuna was the pinnacle of devotional experience in that battle. The top, the peak, the point. Now, Arjuna wasn't interested in killing family members. This is not just an illusion. This is the heart. He had a heart. He was not a machine. He was not selfish. He was not interested in exploitation. He did not even care who was the king. Now, to be such a warrior as he was, especially considered the total out-of-balance way in which his army was so outnumbered that under practical considerations, there was no way to win. The only way he could have accomplished what he had to accomplish was to be so connected in a Zen-like state of direct connection of weapon to effective weapon without any thought, without any doubt, without any consideration, a Zen-like total absolute connection with what he was doing. A 100% connection and pure devotion to the act of killing. Now, how can you do that when it's your relatives on the other side? How can anyone with a heart do that, I ask you? So Krishna steps in and reminds Arjuna his devotion to his friend. However, don't forget, your friend is also the Supreme. The whole focus of your devotion now has to be rejuvenated with an awareness that you ordinarily would not have. And that focus was reestablished by Krishna in Arjuna. So when he was out there in that battle, his foundation, right? That which he was standing on energetically. Because when you talk about a Zen-like state, when you talk about this state, you're talking about an energetic state, not a physical state, not a mental state, an energetic state beyond the mind. He was standing on that connection with the Supreme. And while standing on that, he had full concentrated capacity to perform his work, to perform his action, while tasting at every second that energy with such devotion and experiencing it in direct result of bodies laying on the battlefield, that he had the strength to accomplish what nobody else could have done, had ever done, and will ever do in history. And how could he do it? Because he was a warrior. You know? He is the warrior version of the musician or the artist or the whoever we talked about in the beginning as manifesting that devotion. He did it through his capacities, through his skills that he developed, he cultivated, and he created such incredible connection to in pure devotion. So, I'm not a warrior. I don't go out killing people. I do other things. But I can understand from this how devotion does not have any prerequisites. It's a product of me focusing my energies according to what I am and how I am inspired by the Supreme to manifest what I am while I am being of service. And each of us have our own particular manner in which our devotional experience, in a very similar qualitative way to all the examples we have given today, can manifest. And we will find our way. Not that somebody's going to tell us what it is. We will find it by just simply taking historical account of our lives, taking our interests and our seeds that we have developed into account and how we have manifested it. And in conclusion, I'd simply like to say, everybody has a gift. Everybody has a gift which they may offer when they wish to be of service. And I feel my particular service is to help people find their gift and find the strength to offer it in service to that spiritual energy which just craves interaction on the devotion. It seems to me that what better service can you do for the world than that? Instead of doing the method of trying to fit square pegs in round holes and figure if you just jam them in enough or jam in enough of them, that'll be okay. Just let every little person everywhere, all of us little people, we're all little in our little way, but we can do something big, good, by just doing something according to what we are. Forgetting about quantity, just letting it manifest with its beautiful, loving, ever-present devotion.